I'll start the meeting to order. Where's Ms. Larson? She's not even here. Oh, there she is. We don't have a quorum, so we can't do Representative Eastland's bill, which needs to be voted on. Besides that, Representative Eastland is not here. And so we can't do the minutes. We don't have a quorum, but we don't have the next bill author either, who's Representative Mariani, but to heck with him, Ms. Larson is going to start us through the bill, which is House File 1179. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, this is the K-12 policy bill sent to you from the House Education Policy Committee, House File 1179, first engrossment. I'm going to go through this very quickly. You have both the bill and the bill summary, I believe. Article 1, per our usual arrangement, contains general education provisions. Section 1 has to do with permanent school fund reporting. Section 2 creates another exception to the prohibition against beginning the school year before Labor Day. Section 3 and 4 change reporting dates. Sections 5, 8, 9, and 10 all have to do with billing calculations for cooperatives. Section 6 allows school districts to count as resident pupils foreign exchange students enrolled in a district under a culture exchange program that is registered with the Secretary of State's office. Section 7 was intended as a placeholder for innovation revenue language that appears in...
And Ms. Larson, I'm assuming you know what the amendment is, so you might as well just pretend we passed the amendment, which would mean we're deleting Section 7. Do you know about the amendment?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll just forget about that. I suspect you wrote it. So pretend we've amended it and skip whatever we're deleting. Whenever we get a quorum.
Section 10 makes changes so that districts are able to use levy proceeds to acquire property. In Article 2, which is the largest article in this bill, the topic is education excellence. It covers a variety of provisions. Many of them are in Chapter 120B, having to do with educational accountability and reporting. Section 1 establishes world language proficiency certificates. Section 2 ties course credits to state and local academic standards. This would be effective in the 2012-2013 school year and later. Section 3 has to do with education innovation. The point of this proposal is to improve academic performance for diverse groups of students by supplementing state reading, math, and science requirements and improving student outcomes, among other things. Section 4 provides for two-year grants for AP Summer Training Institutes for high school teachers beginning and ending on October 1 date. Section 5 has 11 definitions that go to the system of accountability. This was part of a bill that Representative Reinert introduced last year and again this year, although this year there are a number of amendments to it having to do with reflecting the department's implementation of a growth model and also indicating the distinctions between federal and state accountability measures. Section 6 is a compilation of a number of different provisions. It provides for computer adaptive reading and math tests for general education students in grades 3 through 8. It provides for field testing requested by the department. It makes grad tests applicable in 2012-2013 to the few students who remain in the system subject to the basic skills test. In paragraph C, there is a provision to create a temporary alternative for students who do not pass the math grad test between 2009-2010 and 2013-2014. This would be the alternative available to students. Paragraph C and E address computer adaptive testing proposals for grades 3 through 8. Subdivision 1A has definitions that pertain to the computer adaptive assessment proposal. Paragraph B directs the state to use the fully adaptive test to the extent that no net loss of federal and state funds occur, and otherwise to use a partially adaptive assessment. Paragraph C has more provisions on computer adaptive testing. It also prohibits the commissioner from requiring students to receive a passing score on a high school science assessment as a condition of graduating. It lists the requirements for annual computer adaptive assessments. It also gives the commissioner the direction to prioritize contracting with providers who are able to offer local school district assessments as an option. Paragraph E in Section 6 requires assessment results to include a value-added growth indicator of student achievement. Paragraph H directs the commissioners of education and finance to annually certify that state assessments both meet statutory testing requirements at the lowest combined total cost to the state and local schools and school districts in terms of test development and local technology infrastructure, and also that they eliminate duplicative testing. The effective date makes the temporary alternative to the state math grad test applicable in the 2009-2010 through 2013-2014 school years. The commissioner would be prohibited from implementing any alternative to the math grad test without specific legislative authority, and computer adaptive tests are made effective for the 2010-2011 school year and later. Section 7 is again from Representative Bryant's bill, as well as from a bill Representative Mariani proposed, having to do with additional tasks for the Office of Educational Accountability. Subdivision 1 has to do with the purpose of the accountability reporting system, that is to promote greater academic achievement and preparation for higher academic education, work, citizenship, and the arts. Subdivision 3 has to do with the Office of Educational Accountability. There is a direction to report to the legislature on various important concepts, the use of statewide educational accountability information related to the impact of the system on K-12 policy, effectiveness, resource distribution, and structure. Also, whether and how a value-added growth indicator estimates the effects of the school and school district on student achievement, as well as its ability to measure school performance. Subdivision 4, having to do with statistical adjustments, distinguishes student growth and student performance. Section 8, again, is from Representative Reinhardt's bill. It has to do with school and student indicators of growth and achievement. There is a requirement to measure and separately report the AYP of schools and the academic growth of individual students. The system would include statewide measures of both high and low student academic growth. Subdivision 2 addresses federal expectations for students' achievement. Subdivision 3 addresses the system as it measures individual students' educational growth. In paragraph B, there is a direction to the commissioner in consultation with experts and other stakeholders to implement an assessment model that uses a value-added growth indicator and includes criteria for identifying schools with medium and high growth, and also to recommend other value-added measures. The expectation for this model is that it might be used to advance educators' professional development and replicate programs that benefit students. There is a declaration that data on individual teachers generated under this model are protected personnel data. The model is expected to allow users to report student growth and report and compare aggregated and disaggregated student growth data using the 9 student categories under NCLB and gender, all consistent with non-public data laws. Also, the commissioner is directed to report separately measures of student growth and proficiency. In paragraph C, there is a direction to the commissioner to annually report 2 core measures related to coursework. Paragraph D, a direction to the commissioner beginning in July 1st, 2013, to report summary data on school safety and students' engagement in connection with school. Both paragraph C and paragraph D correspond to uncoded sections later in this article having to do with the process for further developing these measures. Subdivision 4 directs the commissioner to annually report beginning June 30, 2012 on the organizational curricular practices that schools demonstrating medium and high student growth use. There's also directions commissioner to implement an assessment model that uses a value-added growth indicator beginning in the 08-09 school year. The commissioners report the two separate course-taking measures beginning in the 2010-2011 school year. The commissioners directed to collect summary data on school safety and student engagement and connection beginning in the 2010-2011 school year and to report that data beginning July 1 of 2013. Consistent with advice from experts and classroom teachers, and to annually report organizational curricular practices by schools demonstrating medium high growth beginning in the 2011-2012 school year. Section 9 is also from Representative Briner's bill. Subdivision 1 has to do with school performance report cards and reporting student academic data in the context of federal expectations as well as a number of criteria listed in that subdivision. Subdivision 2 has to do with AYP data. It declares that all data the department uses to determine AYP status, set state growth targets, and determine student growth are non-public data. There is a requirement to annually post federal AYP data and student growth data on the department website. Section 10 has to do with homeschool families. It allows homeschool families to report children's immunization records twice, once upon enrollment and again in seventh grade. Sections 11 and 12 have to do with allowing recently retired teachers to serve out their terms on the Board of Teaching. Sections 13 and following come from a bill from Representative Taft having to do with changing or refocusing a teacher professional development toward teacher toward professional reflection and growth in best teaching practices. There is a direction to the Board of Teaching to ensure that its teacher licensing requirements include the substance of this proposal. It would be applicable to licensees seeking licensure beginning July 1, 2012. Sections 14, 15, 16, and 17 amend the teacher probationary and continuing contract laws, both for teachers generally and teachers in first-class city school districts. This is consistent with the proposals regarding relicensure in Section 13. Section 18 is also part of Representative Taft's bill. This amends the QCOMP law, and it includes a rigorous and research-based professional development system based on national state standards of effective teaching practice that are designed to achieve ongoing and school-wide progress and growth in teaching. As an element of the educational improvement plan that school boards that participate in QCOMP must approve, this would be effective beginning the 2009-2010 school year. Section 19 also has to do with QCOMP. It would require that a QCOMP agreement show evidence of effective practice that encompasses reflection and growth in best teaching practices. This would be applicable to all QCOMP agreements entered into or modified after the effective date of the section. Section 20 also amends QCOMP. It incorporates recommendations from the legislative auditor about deadlines by which interested QCOMP applicants submit applications to the department to participate in the program. This would begin after the effective date of this section. Section 21, which is the last section in the CAF bill, has to do with staff development, and it would require staff development plans to be consistent with the teacher relicensing requirements in Section 13. Section 22 and following reflects a proposal by the Department of Education having to do with state-approved alternative programs. These are parameters and clarifications related to alternative learning centers, alternative learning programs, and contract alternative programs. This is Section 22, 23, 24. 25 is a bill that Representative Detmer offered. It would allow a school hiring authority to pay the cost of conducting a discretionary criminal history background check on school volunteers, independent contractors, and student employees. Section 26 is a provision that was in the policy bill last year. It would exempt school districts from having to hold a formal public hearing when proposing to temporarily close or lease a building. Section 27 and following has to do with online learning. There is a definition of an online course syllabus. Section 28 clarifies procedures for students to enroll in and receive course credit for online learning courses and programs. It requires a provider to make information available about students' academic progress and designate a contact person to facilitate and monitor students' progress. Section 29 is also about online learning. It establishes reporting requirements and review criteria. Section 30 also is online learning. It would require online learning providers to give the department a written statement about the courses being offered, as well as demonstrate that the substance of their course syllabus meets nationally recognized professional standards. Section 31 causes the Online Learning Advisory Council to expire in 2013 instead of 2008. 32, like a number of the previous sections, has to do with state-approved alternative programs, as does 33. 34 clarifies pupil eligibility for purposes of the graduation incentive program. 35
is... I just let you know, I've got about 5 more minutes scheduled for the rest of the bill presentation, so if you could judge your time accordingly.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We've got a ton of amendments.
Yeah, okay. Representative Greiling, how would you like to handle this?
Just go as fast as you can. Talk like, pretend you're me and talk really fast.
Okay.
A lot of us in policy have heard this bill, so I would say you could just...
Yeah, Madam Chair, the most of the significant policy provisions in this bill, in fact, appear in Article 2. Not every last one of them, but the vast majority of them do. 37 is another state-approved alternative program. 38 has to do with early ECFE programs for American Indian families. 39 is technical. 40 has a definition of project-based instructional programs that would be eligible for revenue. Section 41 is a bill that Representative Swales is offering on a T20 partnership. Sections 42, 43, 44, 45 have to do with homeschool provisions, making it easier in terms of working and driving. Sections 46 and 47 are from Representative Reiner's bill. They establish the processes by which the accountability measures will be developed. 48 is part of the temporary alternative to the high-stakes reading and math grad test. Section 49 is a bill that Representative Erdahl is carrying. Section 50 has an appropriation for the OEA. It's an unspecified amount. And Section 51 repeals the value-added assessment program because of the language in Article 2. Article 3 probably contains the other most significant policy changes in this bill. It has to do with special programs of various kinds. Section 1 amends the definition of pupil with a disability under the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act. Representative Newton, Representative McFarland, and others have been working with the special education advocates to come up with a number of agreements for clarifying, streamlining special education provisions. And this article contains much of their work. It also contains a bill that Representative Dabney authored having to do with restrictive procedures. One of the amendments you'll see today represents an effort by the interested stakeholders in clarifying and streamlining that language. There's also language in a bill that Representative Mariani proposed having to do with parent treatment placement both for pupils with disabilities and without. The State Interagency Coordinating Council is extended to 2014. The Resource Center for the Deaf have sections 15 and 14 and 15 having to do with offering programs and also making recommendations to the legislature. Section 16, Article 3, removes the cap having to do with administrative costs for DHS Section 17 has a number of repealers reflecting the special education initiative. Article 4 has to do with libraries. There are only two sections. Section 5, public safety, it's one section plus a repealer. Article 6 has to do with state agencies. There's one section having to do with gifts to the commissioner. And Article 7 contains a number of what the department is calling technical corrections to the education code.
Excellent. You made it. Thank you, Ms. Larson, very much. And Representative Mariani is going back and forth, as are other members, between Ways and Means in this committee. So that's why we're missing some members today. We are going to go back now and do the minutes and then do Representative Eastland, and then we'll go back to Representative Mariani's bill. Representative Newton, you were here on time. Have you looked at March, what is it? March 31st.
Yes. Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes to March 31st.
Okay. Representative Newton moves. Can we do two sets at one time? We'll try it. Move both sets of minutes. One from the 31st and the other one from also the
30th.
Oh, the Farmington hearing, of course. So we'll
move that one. I was
there. Well, you can move it anyway. You looked it over and it looks great to you. All right. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion passes. Minutes are approved. And I do want to take, speaking of the Farmington hearing, just a second to thank Representative Garofalo and his wonderful family for hosting this whole committee and our staff after the excellent hearing that was very well attended and informative in Farmington on education funding, of course. Then we all were graciously invited to his house for a delicious meal and great hospitality. So thank you, Representative Garofalo, very much. You have 30 seconds.
Thank you very much. I really appreciated that. And certainly I could have done without my daughter passing around the picture of me from high school. That was sort of the low light of the evening. But no, I really did appreciate the attendance down there. I think it's probably the most members we had at a committee hearing off-site during the year. So I don't know if that was correlated to the post-committee hearing or not, but it was a refreshing change, and I hope it's something that members of this committee and in other committees get an opportunity to do in the future. So, and as I said last night, I'll repeat to you, I really, really appreciate you doing that for me, so thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Representative Garofalo, in case you get too worked up with love, I'll just tell you that I discussed that picture already with the speaker and the majority leader, and they're going to try to get a hold of your daughter, Abby, and get a copy of it in case they need anything for leverage with you.
Yeah.
Representative Eastland, welcome to the committee, and did you have a member designated to move your bill?
No, I don't. Maybe, is Representative Detmer here?
Representative Detmer, would you like to move Representative Eastland's bill 1127?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would.
Representative Detmer moves House File 1127 be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. I believe, is this one going to the floor, Representative Eastland?
Yes, ma'am.
Very good. Your bill, then.
Thank you. House File 1127 is a clarification in the what we call the military pay differential bill. If you're familiar with that, it's the statute that requires that a public employee pay a pay differential to a reservist that's called up for active duty if the pay that they receive when they are in the military is less than when they, is less than they would have made in their public job. In the pay differential bill, there's a category that deals specifically with K-12 education. And the reason that it's in there is because for a teacher works usually around 9 months rather than a full 12 months. And so to compare a 12-month working year with a 9-month working year is it has some inequities. And so what the current law says, it says that we need to compare the salaries that you would be making in the military and what you would make as a teacher based on your daily rates. And so your daily rate as a teacher, and then the pay differential could be paid for the number of days that you would have taught school. So you would only make the differential for the number of days that you would have taught school. The confusion in the law is that there's a couple of places where the language kind of reverts back to your salary. which people then can kind of think that, well, that might mean an annual salary. And so what we have done in the bill is to try to just clarify that and to make sure the daily rate concept follows all the way through. So when the pay differential is determined, it's determined based on the difference in your daily rate. And the daily rate for a teacher would be based on the number of school days that they would have taught. The daily rate for a military service would be the number of days that they would have been in active service, actually on duty. So that's the essence of the bill. If there's any questions, I guess we could take those now.
If you have a testifier, we'll take the
Okay. Okay. We can have the testifier go ahead. He was here primarily to answer questions, but maybe he could.
Do you want to say anything?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll just make a very brief comment. Obviously,
and if you could state your name and title for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs, Government Relations Officer. And interesting enough, this bill was brought to a member in the House, and a different service member brought it to a member in the Senate. So as we look at, as we say in the military, the new normal, where service members are being deployed on a relatively regular basis, we find that there were some inconsistencies with how the school districts were handling it. And what this bill does is really just normalize it so everyone has the same understanding. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Rep. Detmer.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And just a comment that it's just the wording that we needed to change. It doesn't really change the statute. It's just that in the military, we don't use the word salary. So that was the basic change there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any testimony for or against the bill? Any other discussion?
Just a quick question. If there's a fiscal note on this, it doesn't appear to be one, and would this affect school districts in any significant way that we should even think about?
It's potentially, depending on how a school district has interpreted this, it could have an impact. I mean, if they have used the annual salary as the basis for determining the differential, it could cost them a little bit more money. And that's what we're trying to clean up here, because districts have done it differently. And so what we're trying to do is, from this point going forward, simply say that we'd like all districts to use the daily rate as the determining factor for the differential. But I don't know that, I think it could cost, if a district had used the salary, the annual salary, in the past, it could impact them a little bit negatively. They would have to pay a little more.
Maybe to answer that question, many times a teacher is mobilized and deployed, their salary will stop at that time, and the school district will then hire a substitute teacher for a lot less. So actually the district can come out ahead on these types of situations.
Very good.
I have one other issue that was brought to my attention very late here by Representative Erdahl, who actually was the author of this component of the military pay differential. And it's on line 2.6 in the bill, if you have the bill in front of you. Starting at 2.4, it says the member's salary as a school district employee must include the member's basic salary and any additional salary the member earns from the school district for co-curricular activities. I did a little research to find out what co-curricular means, and co-curricular means only things that happen during the school day. I guess it was suggested that I offer an amendment, and I would offer it for your consideration, and you can do what you like with it, but I would offer an amendment to say for co-curricular and extracurricular activities. Usually extracurricular activities are contracted services. I mean, if you're a debate coach, if you're a drama coach, if you're a football coach, those are all contracted activities, and those are things that are included in your contract. And I would just, if possible, Madam Chair, if someone would offer that as an amendment, I would accept that, and I think it would clarify the bill even further.
Okay. We normally have a 24-hour amendment, but this one sounds fairly straightforward. If Representative Detmer would care to offer the amendment, and are your questions to the amendment, Representative Detmer?
Madam Chair, no, I would be willing to offer the amendment.
Representative Detmer moves on line 2.6 after co-curricular, we put and extracurricular. And if this takes any more than a minute, we're going to withdraw this amendment, Representative Detmer. Representative Benson.
I withdraw because I was going to propose the amendment.
Very good. Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Easton, members of the committee, I would argue that the one difference between your basic contract and your coaching stipend is that one is a continuing contract, the other is not part of your continuing contract. You're not guaranteed, there's no guarantee of that position from year to year. So, it is different.
Are you for or against or neutral on the amendment?
I am speaking against the amendment.
All right. Any other discussion on the amendment? Representative
Detmer. Madam Chair, in some contracts, in some school districts, it is part of your continuing contract. Some school districts might have it, not as, but I know some districts do have continued contracts with their coaching or their extracurricular activities.
Representative Eastland.
Every contract is an annual contract, and Madam Chair, so I mean, and this would be for the contract that is in existence when the deployment would occur. So we wouldn't be worried about a year to year.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, just to clarify this, one of the benefits to the school district when someone goes away, obviously there's a loss of a teacher of significant experience, but the financial benefit is that you pay a substitute usually considerably less, often considerably less. When you are replacing that person with a different coach, that is a different situation because there is a set stipend in the contract that usually is not associated with a longevity or education component. So there's no savings to the school district to replace that coaching position. And I'm not sure how that impacts on the part of the bill, but...
Representative Morgan, are you for, against, or neutral?
I'm leaning to be with Representative Diskins on this one, Madam Chair.
Yes, I agree, Madam Chair. I would feel more comfortable if we could have someone from, I don't know, maybe the school board associations, but...
We're not going to get to the other bill.
Yeah, okay. Well, I have to...
The president of the committee, Madam.
If you want to get to the floor, you might want Representative Detmer to withdraw your amendment. Representative Detmer? You can always do it on the floor, you know.
Madam Chair, I'm retired, so this does not affect me, but I was mobilized for 20 months, and at that time, school districts were not required to make up difference in pay, and I can tell you that school districts do come out ahead when a person is mobilized, deployed, and a substitute teacher is hired. And financially, they do come out ahead, but they lose the expertise of that full-time teacher that was there. So. And many of these people have been coaching, been part of the community. So I think it's a good idea to keep this amendment on the board, on this bill.
You want to keep it at Representative is. Could we have somebody from the School Board Association? Do you want to comment on this? Our staff, by the way, says that this really doesn't matter. We could do this. But if we could get a sentence or two to comfort Representative Depke and others, and then people have different opinions, and we can just go ahead and vote.
Yes.
Mr. Yes. Schneiderwin.
Yes. Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderlin with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I think the issue is, I think it's different a little bit for the coaches. They aren't necessarily continuing contracts. I think it's different for each situation because some districts will actually offer more money as the years progress on your coaching contract. Yours may be a one-time stipend, but it varies based on the number of years. Just like continuing with the salary schedule. And I can't remember, what was the second issue, or was there... So, and I think the issue here, at one point I would agree it was permissive for school districts to do this. This was changed a few years ago. And I think at one point I think there would have been it would have been fair or accurate to say that districts would have been ahead. But I think this position now takes that advantage. If there was any advantage for the district now by paying the substitute, I think this piece fixes that. I think that makes the National Guard person whole, and it doesn't save the school district any money. So
would the school board position be where on the amendment then, just to clarify?
I guess we don't have a position on this.
No,
I don't think there's any particular, I mean, it's up to the committee, I guess, for
very good.
The bill
Thank
office.
You very much, Representative Depke. Anything else?
No, ma'am.
Benson,
just a quick comment to Madam Chair. We have the people who are going to serve in the United States of America, and they're going to be putting their lives on the line somewhere, God knows where. And we're quibbling over a couple of dollars for somebody who is also a coach. I think it's unbelievable that anybody is quibbling about something like that. We should be damn glad these people are prepared to serve their country.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. I think we're ready to vote. All in favor of Representative Detmer's oral amendment 2.6 adding in and extracurricular, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Amendment is adopted. Are we ready to vote on the bill? No one else has to testify, and so Representative Detmer renews his motion for House File 1127, be recommended to pass through the Finance Committee as amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Eastland and Colonel. Representative Mariani, we've been through your bill. We need to have it moved. We will then move your amendment. Ms. Larson went through it as if the amendment were done, so we don't need to explain the amendment.
Madam Chair, I would move House File 1179 be recommended passed and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
Representative Mariani moves House File 1179 for possible inclusion and the amendment.
Madam Chair, I have an A42 amendment I'd like to offer.
Representative Mariani moves the A42 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The amendment is adopted. And then Representative Mariani, we have two testifiers, Peter Knoll and Jeff Borchert, and then we have many, many amendments. So you're going to have a busy afternoon. Probably can't get back to the Ways and Means Committee again, but I would just say for those who aren't on the Policy Committee, thank you very much to Representative Mariani and the many very talented members of his committee who have developed this bill, eight of whom are sitting on this committee. And this is very careful work, and I appreciate that they are passing it along and that we've had a chance to learn about it. And a lot of the discussion will come forward with the amendments. So, Representative Mariani, if you want to say a very short word as Mr. Knoll and Mr. Borchert come forward.
On the whole bill?
Like 1 minute, Representative Mariani. We heard about the bill, so if you want to make a general statement, and if not, we'll go straight to the people.
The good bill members.
Thank you. Okay, where are those two people? Are they not here? Mr. Knoll, I see you, so you should be up here. And what about Mr. Borchert? Is he here? Okay, up to the table. Mr. Knoll, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, my reflexes aren't quite what they used to be.
Welcome to the minute.
But I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of this bill. We have a concern. First of all, I'm Pete Knoll with the Minnesota Catholic Conference Education Director. Overall, we like the bill, but there's a couple of particular aspects of it, and I'll be very brief here, but the bill kind of, the aspect to which I'm referring would roll back 50 years of precedent in Minnesota for providing special education services to parentally placed eligible children in non-public schools. In our opinion, this bill has been kind of, that part of the bill, I should say, has been kind of expeditiously crafted, I think, without really considering what some of the ramifications might be of that, particularly what the true fiscal impact might be. To that end, reducing funding for special instruction back to federal funding, that's captured in Article 3, Section 3E, Line 61.3 through 61.8. Essentially, what that would do would be to eliminate non-public or service to non-public school children as far as IDEA services are concerned. There's about 2,500 students currently, according to the information that we have at our disposal, participating in the IDEA program in non-public schools, and essentially that would cut away the funding for about 2,000 of those by our calculations. There's another component in there, and that's the repealer of statute 125A.18 that would essentially roll back the transportation for the remaining few hundred students in the non-public schools that would be eligible to receive special education services. So, you know, there's some, I think, very unintended consequences that might result from that. particularly not, you know, with the state facing the deficit, which you're intimately familiar with, I'm afraid that the preponderance of these children who are no longer eligible for special education services would need to be placed in public schools. And that certainly, you know, we're not concerned about the education there, but we're concerned about the economic impact that that would create. Let's say, for instance, if 2,000 of those students needed to matriculate in 2009-2010 school year in a public school instead of their school of choice, you know, by a factor of, if you factor in the general education revenue that's allotted for each of those children, that's roughly $10,000, let's say, you're talking about a $20 million addition to the deficit. Now, there's some things I haven't factored in there, and I don't have all the data at my disposal, but, you know, certainly there'd be a little reduction there in transporting these children from their non-public school to the public school for service. But I think that pales by comparison with the added impact that that would have on the overall budget. So I think, you know, I'm just afraid that this would be a tipping point for many parents, and they'd have to make that decision. And and you know, for many reasons, we don't like to see that happen. But I think the one that certainly ought to be of concern to lawmakers would be the addition to the deficit. So I appreciate the opportunity to come and testify, Madam Chair and members, and hope you'll take that under consideration, my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Rudolph, very much. Mr. Borchardt, if you could state your name and title for the record.
Yes, I'm Jeff Borchardt. I'm a behavior analyst with the Rum River Special Education Cooperative. And the part that I wanted to talk about was in Section 8, 125A, .9041, key line item, 2.14. Am I at the wrong? Is that 873? Yes.
Page 73. No. And what line are you on, Mr. Borchardt?
Oh, this is
Section 8.
Yeah.
Line.
I'm sorry, the amendment. It's 2.14, it's part.
You're talking about the amendment. 2.14,
yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Could we clarify for members which amendment we're on? Are we on the DE?
Oh,
or
I do.
One of the other amendments in our package.
Oh. Now, good question, because I don't know what we're on this, but I'm trying to explore too, Representative Dabney. Mr. Borchardt, are you talking about Representative Mariani's amendment or amendment we have not yet had? Because we're not going to talk about those yet. Are you on the A2 amendment that Representative Mariani gave? A42, I'm sorry.
A33.
Okay, we'll save that because we aren't to that point yet.
Okay, I just wondered about that.
Okay, and I just had you on the list here that you had asked to testify. And Mr. Field, are you going to be talking about Ripta McFarland's amendment?
No.
No, okay. This is generally to the bill, not one of the amendments coming up, right?
Speaking to Article 3, Section 3.
Very good. You are on point. Yes, if you could state your name and title for the record.
My name is James Field. I'm the president of the Minnesota Independent School Forum and also the coordinator of the Minnesota State CAPE Council for American Private Education. I represent private education through the national state in D.C. I want to speak about engrossment, Article 3, Section 3, requires school districts to provide eligible children with disabilities who are enrolled by their parents in a non-public education facility located in the district with an opportunity to participate in special education-related service. Requires the district to spend an amount at least equal to the proportionate amount available special education federal funds. Assuming this means that districts will choose to provide services only up to the expenditure of their available federal funds, the results will be a significant reduction and services provided to over almost 3,000 kids, at least 2,500 non-public school children receiving special education services. For many years, the state has provided full services to our non-public students with disabilities, which is far more than can be provided with only federal funds. It is our understanding that much of this federal amount may be used in child find process, leaving little or nothing to provide actual service for the non-public school students found to have disabilities. The result could be the transfer of our non-public school students with disabilities to public schools, which would result in a great increased cost for the state, and Dr. Noel just went over some of those figures. I'd like to also say to the council that the amount of children that go to private and independent and religious schools in Minnesota, non-public schools, saves the state about $1 billion a year. And it's a state asset that saves the state $1 billion a year. And so if you tip that sale, that scale, the state's going to have a bigger deficit than they have now. A public school student, we estimate, cost the taxpayers about $9,500 to $10,000. Those kids transfer to the public school because they need those services, and the family can't afford it to pay the tuition, or can't afford to pay for the independent cost. So it's all transferred to the public school, and it's going to cost the state money. Thank you
very much. Anybody else for or against the bill? Okay, hearing none, we'll go on to the amendments. And members, in your packet, the amendments are in numerical order, but we are not taking them up in numerical order. We'll take them up in the order that they appear in the bill. So you can just keep flipping through your bill as we come to each amendment. So the first one, then, is the A28 amendment. Representative Mariani.
And so I would move the A28 amendment.
Representative Mariani moves the A28 amendment on page 30 of the bill. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair and members, this is the alternative teacher preparation program. We heard this bill in policy, passed it out last week. It basically modernizes and updates our current alternative teacher opportunity and statute, which has been, we've heard testimony in the past that it's basically not really a practical, workable framework. This approach basically would create the opportunity the way it's structured right now. It's not structured for them, but it's structured in such a way that well-respected, research-based alternative teacher prep programs or Teach for America would be able to operate without, in the state of Minnesota, without having to come for an annual waiver. The bill has enjoyed good, strong bipartisan support. It's a good way for us to responsibly reform our current alternative pathway. There is some new language relative to the committee's action on Friday, which basically came as a result of a couple of members raising the question of having your mentor evaluators being the ones who make the recommendation to the Board of Teaching for a permanent licensure. And so what we did is we backed up and we made sure that it was the higher ed affiliated institution that makes that recommendation. So in other words, this alternative teacher path program, it doesn't just simply say any program out there can create and offer these opportunities. They have to be programs that have an established formal relationship with a higher ed institutional partner. So Madam Chair, with that, I would...
And Representative Mariani, I believe this one passed unanimously out of the policy committee, I think. Ms. Altschweiger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Altschweiger, Education, Minnesota. And we support Representative Mariani's idea of trying to improve students' achievement and to close the achievement gap, but we do not think that this bill will do that. Education Minnesota values teacher licensure, and the Board of Teaching is the one that sets the standards for the quality of teachers and the standards for licensure. In this bill, the mentor would be recommending the individual along with the higher ed institution to the Board of Teaching, if I understand the amendment correctly. I think there's some question about how much higher ed institution is involved in this. I can tell you that that some districts have dealt with programs such as this, and they are now having problems. Even when working with the union originally, the district and the union, and in a program similar to Teach for America, that probationary teachers are now losing their jobs. These are individuals who have, think about this, individuals who have decided that they want to be a teacher. They've gone through the 4 years to become a teacher. They were licensed by the Board of Teaching. And a contract is signed with another nonprofit such as Teach for America or the New Teacher Project, guaranteeing a certain number of jobs in that district. And so think about this. In Teach for America, they said that they had a contract of approximately 40 teachers to be placed, the so-called teachers, to be placed in those districts in Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, and charter schools. Now, with this budget, we are going to be cutting teachers. So probationary teachers, maybe even continuing contract or tenured teachers, are going to be cut. With this provision, where you have a nonprofit now preparing teachers for licensure, these people have, the nonprofit would have a contract likely with the district. And now, in addition to those probationary teachers who were cut because of budget cuts, these other alternatively licensed teachers actually will have priority over the other teachers and will be able to get jobs. So think about this. If you just, you know, if you completed your 4 years, you became licensed, you went the normal route, and you've been teaching during your time, you're a third year teacher, you're still in probationary status, and now you're told that there's a Teach for America or a New Teacher Project that has been guaranteed that they're going to get a job. So in terms of the economy, I don't think this is a wise thing to do. But this really doesn't impact our membership, really, because they still will be our members. This is not an issue where we're trying to protect our people. What we're trying to do is make sure that you have quality teachers teaching kids. These individuals or these candidates for Teach for America are very eager. They are very excited. And I could find in the higher ed institutions around the state people who are equally excited, energized, and ready to teach kids. We think that this program has not been proven to the point that we should let these individuals, after 200 hours, a minimum of 200 hours of intense preparation, taking a couple of tests, we don't think that they're ready to teach. When the regular program has individuals, students teaching for a number of weeks. And do we want to put those individuals into the classroom to work with kids when they have not been proven? They'd be there for a year. I was told in the other body that these teachers would not be paid the same as regular first-year teachers. I just heard that a few minutes ago. I haven't had time to verify that. And so sorry that I haven't had the time to ask the author, because I was just told that the other day, just a few minutes ago. So we have serious concerns about it. The mentors, we don't believe, have the qualifications necessarily. There isn't any training for mentors. We think that there's a cost to this, and there are a number of problems, and we would strongly urge you not to adopt this amendment, with all due respect to Representative Mariani and the wonderful work that he does.
He does do wonderful work, and you do as well. We have one question from Representative Detmer, and then we'll go to Representative Mariani for a closing statement, and then we'll vote. Representative Detmer. Dimmer, I mean.
Yeah.
Now you're sitting next to each other. Right?
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, I had to welcome Representative Dimmer to my side of the table. Ms. Alford, I do have a question for you, and I understand the issue of the jobs and that sort of thing. But my question for you is, what do you think the role of the local school board, the local administration, should be when they're hiring and trying to determine the best qualified, the best matches, the people best capable of teaching their kids? And what should be their role as opposed to what should be our role?
Ms. Alsteiger and then Representative Mariani. Ms. Alsteiger.
Madam Chair and Representative Dimmer, that's an excellent question. Their job should be, as it is now, to get a qualified candidate, to make the decision about which qualified candidate do they get that is hired by, or excuse me, who is licensed by the Board of Teaching using the Board of Teaching standards that we have currently in place, not the ones in this amendment. And once that district hires that teacher must prove him or herself for 3 years before they get out of that probationary status. So this is not changing any decision-making by a school board, necessarily. What we are concerned about, because they can hire or not, continue that person or let that person go. The issue is, who is establishing the criteria or the standards for licensed teachers? Right now, it's the Board of Teaching, and if you pass this amendment, it is 340 school districts making decisions on their own, and because the mentor is the one, as I understand the amendment, to make the decision, it could be 500 mentors with different standards. And that we do not believe that the mentors are going to be checking completely with the Board of Teaching to make sure that they meet those standards.
Representative Mariani,
closing
statement.
Well, Madam Chair and members, we have what we believe is a very rigorous process. And I remind you all, we currently have an alternative teacher pathway in staff. It's just not workable. What we created is a workable pathway that's based on rigor. Look at the language on page 2. In addition to the 200-hour instructional phases, you have resident mentors. We've got embedded staff development work going on here. We've heard from two of the big school districts here in the Twin Cities, well, one big and one not so big anymore, Minneapolis, St. Paul, who embrace this, communities of color, the Board of Teaching supports this effort. The districts are trying to fill shortage areas in many cases. We've got a couple of things happening in our state with demographic shifts, with aging teaching force. There's nothing in here that replaces collective bargaining agreements having to do with tenure rights of teachers. The districts are making intelligent choices trying to match up good, well-prepared, rigorous teachers with their needs. We can certainly continue to perfect this language. I've been open to doing that, but I think we've got a good proposal.
Very good. All in favor of 828, say yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Opposed, say no.
No.
Motion passes, and the amendment is adopted. I made a mistake. We're going to go in order now, not numerical order. And the first one then, the next one is A32, which is Representative Dimmer. Representative Dimmer. They're in numerical order in your packet, members, and I meant to go in chronological order through the bill. I started out in numerical order, made a mistake, but we're now going back to A32, which is on page 9 and starting out through the beginning of the bill. Representative Dimmer, do you want to move your A32 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I do move A32 amendment.
Representative Dimmer moves the A32 amendment. Could you tell us briefly what it is? I think we all know.
All I can say is we're back.
Okay, ready to vote.
I do have a verbal amendment.
Oral amendment from Representative Dimmer. What is it?
On line 2.28.
On page 2, line 2.28.
Change the dates from delete 2009-2010 and submit 2011-2012.
Representative Dimmer, you want it only on line 2.28 then. Representative Dimmer?
Wherever it needs to be made for those dates,
all right.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Dimmer incorporates
changing 2009, 2010 to 2011, 2012, wherever it relates, and we will leave it up to the staff to get that to our secretary. So that is incorporated. Representative Detmer.
Yes, Madam Chairman. Again, I'm representing Representative Norton, who's the author of this bill, and I'm a co-author. And again, as you know, last session that I also supported as a co-author with Representative Ward. And again, as we heard this testified in not only this committee, but also in the policy committee, we feel that we really need to establish some standards for our schools and physical fitness. And again, it's a half credit. We did drop the health education last session, and it's just to stay with the physical fitness half credit. And again, we've heard a lot of testimony in this. I don't need to go into it, but I really feel it's that's important that we pass this and put this on the bill. And I changed the dates because it will give some schools and also give people time to really take a look at it, and it would be given some time to make these adjustments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. And I will just say, and then I'll go to Representative Mariani, and I think we don't need to spend any more time on this one. I think we all know this one through and through. We had it in our bill last year. I strongly support it. I also honor the work of the policy committee and our general theme that I think we have bipartisanly agreed upon this year, which is, so I'll be curious to know what the policy committee chair thinks then of the change of date. But unless he's changing, I'm sticking with him and the policy committee, and that is that it's a very hard fiscal year. I actually think that it's not going to be done in this fiscal year. It's going to be the next biennium as well, and that's why we had the broad amendment on the floor to make sure we balance everything out for 4 years and not just two. And hence, we have been trying to give districts as much flexibility as possible. We have Representative Tilbury and his committee with the mandate reduction task force. We have more mandate reductions, I think, in some of the amendments that we have today. And yet, here we have one more mandate, which is what the school districts have asked. If we're not going to give them any new money, then please give them no new mandates and as much relief from mandates as possible. So even though I desperately support this and believe in it, and that Harvard professor that we had in policy who talked about the brain research, you know, it was so compelling to me that I can't begin to tell you. But I yet think that we need to leave this up to local control this biennium because of the extreme financial circumstances. And Representative Mariani, anything to add to that before we vote?
First of all, I think the new information this year was, in fact, that there's good research that shows strong link between organized physical activity and academic achievement. We've not talked about this issue in that reason. Focus on the public health side, which is an appropriate issue. The interesting thing about this bill is that it passed out of our committee as a standalone bill to this committee. When we put together the omnibus bill a month or so later, we struggled with this issue of the mandates that Chair Riley just mentioned. We note that the fiscal note came in about that time. It's a zero fiscal note, but I suspect the fiscal note is related to state expenses and not necessarily the school district expenses. I do think that it appears to me that by changing the date, what the Senate Governor has done is allowed some time either into the near future for school districts to adjust and adapt. I think everyone pretty much really likes this idea. I think the issue is whether or not you want to be able to mandate the school districts at this point, this particular policy direction. That's precisely what the policy committee struggled with, and that's why we didn't put it in the omnibus bill.
Very good. So it sounds like the chairs are agreed, and Representative Detmer, and Representative Detmer, you're on the policy committee, so it better be something new. Representative Detmer.
Well, I'll just close then that, kind of like the person that wants to start a physical fitness program for their own personal health, they just keep putting it off, keep putting it off, keep putting it off. That's all I can say. Thank you.
Well, Madam Chair, yes, I am on the policy committee, but still, Madam Chair, I think there's like 11 members in this committee that are not on the policy committee. And the only thing I'm going to point out is that I'm a proponent for physical health and that sort of thing. This does not only take away from local control, because it's a local option right now, it has this, a local standard right now, but it also takes away from options for kids. Until a point in time we have longer school days, this has taken away some of the options that kids might have for electives and that sort of thing. So I think members need to be aware that this is a fourth standard that we would be putting into statute as a fifth. I mean, we are taking away options, and until the point in time we have a longer school day, this does take away options for kids and their parents.
Thank you very much. Real short rip from Deborah.
I have a question, Madam Chair. What would be the option to provide the standards to these districts so they have them and so they could implement them on their own?
Rep. Mariani.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I think the options currently exist for school districts to do this, if I understand your question correct.
Okay. Any other questions? All in favor, then, of the A32 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Amendment is not adopted. Representative Newton, A36, on page...
A36.
Representative Newton moves the A36 amendment. Representative Newton, page 16.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an amendment that has to do with the recording of the score for the math test, and it's just to make the score relative to something. So what it does, if you see on line 22, page 16, after a score, insert as the total number of test items and the number of test items the student answered correctly. So it would simply read 14 out of 28 as a number. So it gives some relativity to the test score.
Representative Newton, sounds straightforward. Where did it come from? Did you think it up, or did some group want it?
There's a group that wanted it. The business, it's the Weaver's group.
Yeah. It was the business partnership,
yes,
then?
Ma'am.
Okay, very good. Any discussion? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'm fine with whatever the committee wants to do.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendments adopted. Anything the business partnership wants. Representative McFarland, the A40 amendment.
I don't have A40.
Is that right? A40, yeah, A40. So the pages get the A40 amendment to Rep. McFarland. It's on the bottom of the pile. But
it's not my amendment, though.
Oh, it's not.
A40.
It's computer adaptive testing. Is that the one you're pulling that one, okay?
It's not my amendment. I didn't.
And apparently A40 was actually pretty much covered in Rep. Mariani's amendment.
Madam Chair, members, the A42 amendment included language that was agreed upon.
Very good.
Between the department and...
So we don't need this amendment. Excellent. Representative McFarland, did you...
I guess I will do it. I guess...
Representative McFarland, is this your amendment? Yes, it is. I just found out it is. I'm sorry. Okay, Representative McFarland, I don't know if you were here when Representative Mariani went through it. Ms. Weber says you should withdraw it. It was covered in the agreed upon Department Mariani first amendment. Thank you very much. A39, though, Representative McFarland, I have that down that it is yours. All right, Representative McFarland, the A39 amendment.
Madam
Chair,
help
from all the help we can get this time.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to introduce the A39 amendment, and I do have some need to incorporate some author amendments.
Representative McFarland, move the A39 amendment and see your oral amendment.
Okay. On page 32, or line 1.2 of the amendment, I should say, anything after the comma can be stricken.
Now, wait a minute. There's three commas, Representative McFarland.
Number 32, comma.
So you want page 32 and then strike the rest of the line?
Right.
Okay.
And on line 1.3, strike the word and.
Okay.
And then on line 1.5, put a period after environment and delete the rest on line 1.5 and delete all 1.6.
Very good. So the amendment now, or Representative McFarland is moving an oral amendment on 1.2, delete everything after page 32, comma. 1.3, delete the and at the beginning of the sentence. 1.5, put a period after environment and strike the rest of the sentence. And 1.6. Mr. Crow, another thing?
Representative McFarland, the staff is saying you only want to delete on 1.2 lines 28, or you only want to delete the S after to make lines plural 28.2, but you want to keep line 32. Is that right?
I'm assuming so. Madam Chair, this is an agreement with Representative Cass, who authored the bill that came forward on this, and this is a compromise that we've come forward with, and I just wanted to make sure it got through.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. Representative Cass is in the audience. You want to shake your head? Yes. Representative Cass is shaking his head. Yes, this is agreed upon, and so it's all right with him. This is amending his bill. The staff is poking me, so we'll see what they're saying. They'll get the things cleaned up. Representative Mariani, is this compromise all right with you?
Madam Chair, yes. If it's all right, we're open to the cast. It sounds like he's working closely with the department to arrive at some good meeting ground.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right. Representative McFarland renews her motion that the A39 amendment as amended be passed. So, into the bill. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Representative Mariani, the A29 amendment.
I'm sure I will move the A29 amendment.
Representative Mariani moves the A29 amendment. Representative Mariani.
Yes, sir. This is a bill that the Policy Committee actually moved to the floor a little while ago. The Senate, I'm not sure what's happening over in the Senate with it, so we want to make sure that the language continues to be playable throughout the rest of the session. It will clarify a change in law that we did last year in regards to the Board of Teaching conducting background checks on teacher applicants. The Board is seeking for clarification of the law. And apparently the Board is having a hard time determining whether past disciplinary actions, being the determiner of whether past disciplinary actions involve sexual misconduct. And so this would allow the Board of Teaching to provide all public data, so we're talking about public data, on disciplinary actions, except for disciplinary actions resulted from things like failure to pay child support, spousal support, or taxes. So I would encourage your support. We moved this out, as I said, about a month ago in our committee.
Thank you very much. Any discussion? All in favor of the A29 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. The A29 amendment is adopted. Representative Demmer. The A31 amendment.
I was saying, yes, that is my amendment, Chair, A31.
Representative Demmer moves the A31 amendment. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Well, this amendment is the one that we heard in Representative Hornstein's transportation bill in policy, and this is the part of his bill that dealt with education. And basically what it does, right now when a school district wants to remodel or when they want to build a new building and they ask for a review and comment from the department, one of the department's parameters is a minimum number of acreage that's needed for that remodeling or for the new school. And basically what this does, Madam Chair and members, is it takes out, it basically says that the department cannot do a negative review and comment just because they aren't meeting minimum acreage requirements. That is the bottom line to this. And Madam Chair, I spoke in favor of this even in policy, and the main reason is the school district working with architects, working with the needs of their school districts. There are already standards regarding how much space you need for parking, how much space you need to build the building, and I think we can leave that to the professionals, both within the district as well as the architects, to do that. And I think the department's okay with not having to decide if it's enough acreage or not. So I move the A31 amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on the A31 amendment? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, it's a good amendment. We did act on this in a bigger bill, and we focused this on the K-12 parts, and it was good. I think good, strong bipartisan support. I think it's a very good amendment.
Very good. No, there's no further. The A31 amendment. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Representative Newton, the A34 amendment. A34.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. The A34 amendment is a continuation of the work that's being done with the advocacy group and the MSBA and the department, and all parties agreed to the amendments.
Very good, and you've been doing wonderful work. All the parties that you have, I think, are excellent players, and again, this is something that we really need to deal with, and I appreciate that you've got it worked out. Is there any discussion on the A34 amendments? Director Mariani.
And Chair and members, I would urge you to continue to honor the work of the task force. Very difficult to get agreements here. Representative Newton's done a good job of driving that and giving us some good abilities to modernize this, these statutes.
Thank you very much. All in favor of the A34 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion passes. Amendment is adopted. Representative Newton, you have the A35 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A35 amendment, I'd like to make an oral amendment to that.
I'm sorry, the A33 amendment. We just did the A35.
That is Representative McFarland's amendment.
Wait a minute. Oh, it's Representative McFarland. Okay, Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to introduce the A33 amendment.
Wait a minute. Now, I think I went one too fast.
Yeah, we have not acted on the A35 amendment.
Okay. So the A30, well, so Representative McFarland, yours is A33. So that's the one I wanted to take. So Representative McFarland, A33.
Yeah.
Okay, so it is introduced, ma'am. So you move the A33 amendment, Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last week in policy, I had moved to delete these sections in the policy bill, and since then there's been a meeting of all the stakeholders, and including, and maybe Sue Abderholden could come down while I'm talking. It brought a lot of the different stakeholders together to talk about these sections of the law. I left after 3 hours of the meeting. There was a lot of progress that was made. I'm really impressed by the progress, and I think this is a good step forward, and that's why I'm bringing it forward.
Very good. And is this the one Mr. Borchert wanted to testify on? Mr. Borchert. I don't know. I thought he was trying to see. Oh, I see him right there. No. And Ms. Abderholden, you can stay up there too. I didn't see you there. But Mr. Borchert signed up ahead, so we'll let him go first, and then we'll take Ms. Abderholden. Mr. Borchert, please identify yourself for the tape, and sorry I called you up too soon before.
That's okay. I was a bit confused, but now I figured out why.
I was too, so that's my fault.
Jeff Borchert, I'm a behavior analyst with the Drum River Special Ed Cooperative, and thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have one specific area in here that I wanted to talk about. It is Section 9, Subpart 2, and talking about restrictive procedures and the individuals whom are qualified to implement those procedures. And listed there is basically a number of typical school staff you would see working in the school, including licensed special education teachers, school social workers, school psychologists, behavior analysts certified by the National Behavior Analyst Certification Board, other licensed education personnel, paraprofessionals, as listed under Section 120B.363, or mental health professionals under Section 245.4871, Subdivision 27, with completed training and program listed later in Subdivision 5. What I wanted to talk about is that there is a number of school professionals who work closely with these students whom are not included in this listing of qualified individuals. In Minnesota, it is not a requirement for behavior analysts to be board certified. And there is a large number of those behavior analysts working within the school district who have basically the same qualifications as those who have gone through the board certification, with the exception of going through that process. For instance, I myself am not board certified. I have my master's in behavior analysis. I have over 20 years of experience working with adults and children, developing positive plans and working with some individuals with very challenging behavior. In addition, I also have over 20 years of experience as a certified crisis intervention instructor, teaching hundreds of individuals in regards to how to work with de-escalation techniques and to safely manage students who might be endangering themselves or others. And like you said, there's a significant number of those individuals working in the school district who don't just fall in that loophole in regards to the way that those qualified staff are laid out. And that would be, a situation where I would be training staff on how to do these things, but yet would not be allowed to implement those programs based on the way the qualifications are laid out.
Very good. Ms. Afterholden.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and I would certainly be willing to work with you in the back of the room to figure something out. We just didn't want to say someone with a who had a trained psychologist, So I'd be willing to try to work something out clearly for something like that.
Okay. Appreciate it very much. This bill is constantly being worked out, and Ms. Abderholm is heading up the effort with Representative Newton, and there's many other.
I understand it's been important.
And Representative McFarlane is working on it. Representative McFarlane.
Unfortunately, MASC wasn't at the meeting, so I would hope that maybe we could withdraw this for a few minutes. Maybe they could work something out. We could bring it forward and finish it.
Ms. Abderholm, you think you can work that fast?
Well, it took me 4 hours before earlier this week, but Madam Chair, what I'd like to suggest, because Mace actually was the one who suggested the national certification originally 9 months ago. So I'd let you keep going, adopt this, we'll work it out, and it could be just a one wording change.
Okay, Representative McFarlane, your choice. Do you want to withdraw it or a vote on it?
Let's vote on the amendment, and we could do another amendment later if we have to.
Ms. Abderholm?
Madam Chair, I think that would be terrific. And I do want to thank Representative Dabney for kind of giving the leeway to try to bring everybody together, and Representative McFarland and Newton and the dozen of other people, along with the cookies and the box of chocolates, that really helped us forge this compromise.
Apparently, Representative Newton brought the chocolate. Ms. Abderholm?
Yes, and they were much more expensive than I would have brought.
Very good.
Or could have legally.
Ms. Alfire, are you looking to testify?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and also the Education Minnesota, we understand there are a number of great things in this bill. We would like to also work with the author. I've been brought to my attention about some of the paperwork that this creates. And at a time when we're cutting budgets and cutting staff, we are concerned about some of the paperwork. So we'll be very happy to work with Ms. Abderholden, and hopefully that we can come to just a little bit of fix because of the paperwork involved.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We're trying to reduce paperwork, so please help. All in favor, Representative Dabney.
I just wanted to publicly thank Representative McFarland for her leadership and Representative Newton for the experience that she brought to the table in working with Ms. Abderholden and a number of other stakeholders. This is good work, and I'm appreciative of the work they've done.
Well said. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you.
All in favor of the A33 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Amendment is adopted. Representative Newton, A35.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The A35 amendment also is a continuation of what we've been doing with the stakeholders and MSBA. However, I do have an oral amendment I'd like to make on page 1R to delete. Page 1R is the third page from the back. It's after the, it's in the appendix.
Page 1R.
And it's section about three quarters of the way down, 121A43. I'd like to delete the
Representative Newton, don't seem to know where you found a page 1R.
From the back of the appendix, yeah.
Oh, of the bill. I'm sorry. I'm looking at your amendment. Oh.
The repeal language.
Okay. On the repealer section of the bill.
Yeah.
Okay. Page 1R.
And I'd like to delete the repealer 121A43, which is about three quarters of the way down.
So your oral amendment is to also delete the 128.43 amendment.
You don't have the bill?
Okay, Representative Newton, the staff thinks that this is not right, so why don't we go to the, if you could withdraw that temporarily, Ms. Representative Newton, we could do the A38 amendment.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative McFarland.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to introduce the A38 amendment.
Representative McFarland moves the A38 amendment. Representative McFarland.
Okay, I do have an oral amendment to incorporate.
Okay.
Page 60, delete section 3.
Okay, now Representative McFarland, you are on the bill. Page 60.
Right. Yes, on the bill.
And you're wanting to delete section 3.
which is an addition to this. And I would also like to, an additional part, page 84, line 16, delete 125A.03.
Okay, you're deleting section 3 on pages 60 to 61, and then repeat your next one.
Page 84, line 16, delete 125A.03.
Page 84, and I still didn't get the rest. 84, line 16,
delete 125A.03.
125, just the, okay, I'm fine. Page 84, line 16, just delete the Minnesota statutes 125A.03. Is
correct.
That correct?
Correct.
Okay, Representative McFarland, we've got that. Tell us what that does.
Okay, madam, that would reinstate the existing law regarding special education to private students. This is in response to some of what the testifiers earlier came forward on. You know, I'm a former school board member, and I understand the impact that this has on school boards, but I also represent all the citizens in my community, whether they go to private or public schools. And I think this is an area of law, both sections 125A.03 and 125A.18, that really need to get together and revisit these sections of law. And I think that could be done best in a working group, when we have more time to really look into it deeply. And so that's what I'm so passionate about it, I would offer to work on that working group.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. And Representative McFarland incorporates her oral amendments into her A38 amendment. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair and members, this is a provision that came out of the task force. Okay. From Representative Newton, and I think we should let Representative Newton speak to this issue.
Representative Newton.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if MSDA would like to talk about it.
We have one more amendment and not a lot of time. Caucus is in here soon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. This is a shared time revenue. This is really where special education students in private schools get 100% reimbursement from their district of residence, and your public schools get, between excess levy and regular special ed, about 73%. I think I'm pretty close on that. So for school districts, it's sort of the question, why do you treat a special ed kid differently? And we would suggest the federal law where you divide it out on a per student basis, so every child in Minnesota with special needs gets the same amount of support, would be fairest, and that's what Representative Newton's bill does. But I realize the idea is never to slight anybody, but just treat all the children the same way.
Very well said. Thank you very much. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, House staff, it would seem like we should have a fiscal note or a local impact note on the provision that's in the omnibus bill. Do we have that?
Representative Garofalo, I will call on Mr. Crow. I don't think anyone asked for one. Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, this would, Representative Garofalo, no local impact note was requested on this bill. And those usually take quite a bit of time. So.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Garofalo.
Just so I understand it, I mean, I would think the department, in seeing this, I'm looking for some guidance from the department. They would see this and wave a flag. And I mean, it seems pretty obvious there's a local impact note to these provisions in the bill. Is it the responsibility of the department to point these out, or for the members to point this out to the department, or is it both?
Representative Graffel, the department has been working with this committee. If they wanted a fiscal note, they had ample time to do one. This committee has been working for weeks.
Okay, thanks.
Any other discussion? Representative Newton.
Madam Chair, just very briefly, I prefer to leave this in, because what's happening is we're taking money out of the general fund of the school districts to pay for the subsidies to the private schools, and I don't think that that's right.
Thank you very much, Representative Newton. And I think that, as Ms. Kelleher explained this, it's not to deny some and not. It's to have everybody be on an equal footing and not have the public school students actually at a financial disadvantage. Any further discussion? If not, the A38 amendment is before us as the amendment has been incorporated. So all in favor of the A38 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
in the division, Madam Chair?
I will say that the amendment passes, and then you can have the division.
Oh, never mind then.
Oh, no, you asked for a division ahead of time. Okay, division. I thought we were going to say, okay, never mind. All in favor, say aye.
No.
I mean, raise your hand. Raise your hand. I'm sorry.
So this is for the ayes?
This is the ayes. All, or let's see if the staff can count. All right. All opposed, raise your hand. Seven ayes, 11 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Newton, back to you. And the staff has said that the oral amendment you're looking for is on page 59, deleting section 51. Would you wish to move your amendment again and then incorporate that?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair.
Representative Newton moves the A35 amendment, and he's incorporating on the bill page 59, deleting section 51. Representative Newton.
Once again, Madam Chair, this is an amendment that was agreed to by the advocacy groups and MSPA along with the department, and I ask that we approve the amendment.
Representative Newton, I'm sorry to say the staff is disagreeing with each other. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, I'm certain Representative Newton does not intend to delete Section 51 on page 59.
Ms. Larson, do you have any idea what he's trying to delete?
Yes, Madam Chair, it's
Representative Newton.
Page 84, line 16.
Okay, let's take a look at that and see what Ms. Larson has to say. Ms. Larson, page 84, line 16.
And that's sections 121A43.
Okay, Representative Newton is trying to strike that page 59. Business now, we're on page 84. And line 84.16, and it's 121A.43. Representative Newton, what is that?
That pertains to exclusion and expulsion of students with a disability. And we're going to continue to work on that, Madam Chair.
So, Representative Newton, you're deleting that, but inserting your A35 amendment.
That's correct.
All right. Representative Newton incorporates that. Any, Ms. Larson, is that? Okay, she's shaking her head, yes. Any discussion on this amendment? This is worked out by the group. Ms. Abderholm is shaking her head. Yes. Any further discussion? All in favor, then, of the A35 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. The amendment is adopted. We are now on the bill as amended. Representative Mariani renews his motion for A1179 as amended. Representative Mariani, we're over time, but if you have any final comments.
Madam Chair, we'll revisit, I suspect we'll be revisiting this when we construct the omnibus finance bill so we can have time then to talk about whatever is left.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Larson may have a correction. Ms. Larson.
Members, thank you. We do need to make one correction in the bill, given that we adopted the language from Representative Dabney's bill that Sue Abderholden testified to on restrictive procedures. The effective dates in the restrictive procedures amendment go to 2011. So in order to be consistent, on page 84, line 19, delete 2010 and insert 2011.
Madam Chair, I'll move that amendment.
Representative Dabney moves the amendment as spelled out by Ms. Larson. Any questions on that amendment?
Madam Chair, I'm hearing there's another small one that needs to be added.
On that amendment or yet a different one?
On that one.
On that one. Ms. Abderholm.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. On line 84.22, the rules as well were being removed, and we need to make sure that they line up with the law, so that would have to change to 2011 as well.
Okay. I'm going to call on Ms. Larson again, and does this, if she could clarify what we're voting on, that Representative Dabney is moving.
Yes. Madam Chair, members, the amendment you adopted on restrictive procedures that was Representative Dabney's bill has 2011 as the effective date. The repealers that are in Article 3, at the back of Article 3, correspond to the language in the restrictive procedures amendment.
Ready.
So for paragraph C, beginning on 8420, and also paragraph B, beginning on 8418, we need to change the effective date from July 1, 2010 to July 1, 2011 in both paragraphs B and C to be consistent.
Very good. So on 84.19, it's 2011 now, and 84.22, it's 2011. Representative Dabney, is that all right with you?
Absolutely.
Any discussion? All right. All in favor of that oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. That yes. amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Ms. McFarland.
I think that Ms. Aberholden has the amendment to that, the A33 amendment. I think they made an agreement. Maybe we could get that incorporated.
Ms. Aberholden.
Thank you.
Representative McFarland wanted to move that a person with a master's degree in behavior analysis onto the amendment somewhere in 216, like after the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, and that would allow the previous testifier to be able to do those, to do it.
And so Ms. Larson has to have this straight so we can get it.
Well, a person, I'm sorry, Madam Chair,
Ms. Aberholden,
a person with a master's degree in behavior analysis.
Representative McFarland moves, and we will have Ms. Larson say it again. And this is the fast work that didn't take 4 hours. You've got it done already for our Mr. Borchert. Wonderful.
Without shock.
Would it be after analyst? You want to mention two that to clarify?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, is it correct that the intent is to add, in addition to analyst certified by the certification board? Okay. So on page 2, line 16 of the A33 amendment to House File 1173, insert a person with a master's degree in behavioral analysis, comma.
Representative McFarland, is that what you wanted?
It sounds wonderful.
Sounds wonderful. Representative McFarland says, all in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment is adopted. And we're now on the bill, and members don't run off because after we vote on it, Representative Rothwell
laying it over,
so we don't need to bother with that. But Representative Rothwell has an announcement. So Representative Mariani renews his motion for 1179 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you so
Thank
much,
you.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Republican members, there's a, for Republican members, the K-12 committee and meetings immediately after this meeting up in my office. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And this meeting tomorrow, by the way, will be in the basement hearing room for some reason or other. So the meeting is adjourned.